This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, crossover NBA podcast. Chris Mannix and Howard Beck recording bright and early on a Tuesday morning. And you can't see this if you're just listening at home, but Howard Beck is just full of energy right now, full of life, just looking like the ray of sunshine many of you know him to be. Good morning, Mr. Beck.
I mean, good is a relative term. Oh, morning is a relative term. I'm jet lagged, I'm sleep deprived, I'm cranky, and a bunch of people said a lot of really stupid crap on Media Day, so let's go.
Yes, let's go. The NBA is back. Media Day for, I believe, 29 of the 30 teams. The Lakers are like the only team, I think, that do Media Day on Tuesday. Is that? I think that's
they're the Lakers. Correct. It's all part of Lakers exceptionalism. You do Media Day whenever you feel like it. It's really just a state of mind.
I think, you know, they wanted to let LeBron James have more time to prepare to be on the Manning cast last night. Did you catch any of that? LeBron was part of the Peyton Manning and Eli Manning Monday Night Football broadcast on Monday.
I'm vaguely aware that there is something called a Manning cast that LeBron somehow, for some reason, made some guest appearance, but that also that Eli Manning flipped a double bird for reasons I'm not clear on, but... you know, the NFL, they do things different, too.
It's really good. It's really good. And I wondered if something like this would work because the Mannings are in two different locations. And oftentimes, it just doesn't work as well as you think it's going to. But this one really works. And how they rotate, you know, kind of athlete guests in like LeBron is excellent. LeBron made some news on social media last night when he noted that in 2011, during the lockout, the Seattle Seahawks and the Dallas Cowboys apparently offered him a contract to play in the NFL during that stretch. You remember the lockout that extended, yeah, what, till around Christmas time?
Just before Thanksgiving it wrapped, yeah. Or around
Thanksgiving. Yeah, and the season started. Yeah, the season started right at Christmas time. So LeBron said he didn't obviously have an opportunity to do that, but I thought that was interesting. LeBron was an all-state wide receiver in Ohio. He obviously has the physique to be like an NFL tight end. In 2011, he was probably in the peak of his athletic form. I hesitate, Howard, to, you know, buy into the idea that a great athlete in one sport can do it in another. I mean, Michael Jordan, one of the greatest athletes ever, you know, was a mediocre baseball player at best. But I got to say, I think LeBron probably could have hacked it in the NFL. A guy with that type of athleticism, if he had any kind of hands, he'd probably make a pretty good tight end.
I mean, he would have been incredible. I mean, the thing is, the athleticism absolutely translates in this case. Baseball, you know, the Jordan thing, first of all, that Jordan was able to play at high-level minor league baseball at all after not
playing amazing.
Forever. It was actually really incredible. I mean, I thought I've always thought that idea was overblown, that he somehow embarrassed himself. Like, that was really hard. Football, the physicality and athleticism involved in that, and given the way that LeBron is built, I mean, he probably could have been a Hall of Fame tight end. I have very little doubt about that. He's talked about his football career before. My buddy Jonathan Abrams, I think, has written at length about that in the past. Others probably have too. And that would have been fascinating to see, but can you imagine? LeBron's career would have been probably the average NFL career, much shorter than average NBA career. At some point, your body starts breaking down faster. Here we are, LeBron's going into his 19th NBA season. Unless you're a protected quarterback in the NFL, no, you're not making it 19 years.
No, you're not. So I think he picked the right sport, no doubt about it. All right, so let's start with what happened in Brooklyn on Monday, Howard. Nets Media Day. Interesting sight. Nets, of course, a front runner to win the championship this season. Kevin Durant was there. James Harden was there. LaMarcus Aldridge, coming back from a heart issue, was there. Kyrie Irving was not, at least not physically. New York, as most people know right now, has a law on the books that says that unvaccinated people cannot be in certain enclosed buildings. And the Barclays Center, where the Nets held their media day, is one of them. So Irving, who is believed to be unvaccinated, we don't know 100% for sure, was not in the building. Irving was asked about his vaccination status. He asked for privacy about what he called the personal decision. He was then asked by our friend Malik Andrews, I think, a fair basketball question. The Nets play 41 times at the Barclays Center. If Irving is unvaccinated, he would not be eligible to play in those games. Let me play you, Howard, the exchange between Malik Andrews and Kyrie Irving.
In the spirit of not putting limitations on the future, do you expect to play in home games in New York, considering the rules in this state?
Again, I would like to keep all that private. Please just respect my privacy. Like all the questions kind of leading into what's happening, you know, just please, everything will be released at a due date. And once we get this cleared up, but as of right now, just please respect my privacy regarding anything around home games, what's happening, vaccination, please. So, do you have another question, Malik? I'd love to answer it.
Howard, I don't think that this is, I don't think this falls under the umbrella of a respect my privacy type of situation. This is really, this is a basketball question. Like, you know, if Kyrie Irving is not vaccinated, he can't play. And it seems unrealistic to think that Irving would only play in road games. And I think you'd have to exclude road games at Madison Square Garden, where the Knicks are under the same, or Kyrie would be under the same rules playing against the Knicks. So you're talking 43 games that Kyrie would be ineligible. This is a legitimate basketball question that I think Kyrie has to answer.
Of course it is. Of course it's a basketball question. Of course he has to answer it. Of course this isn't about privacy. I don't even know where to begin here, Maddox. So I'm just going to like rant for a bit, and then I'll stop ranting when I run out of steam. Basketball first, just because, right? 41 home games, the two against the Knicks, that's 43. Who knows? Maybe he can't play at the Chase Center in San Francisco either. That would be 44 games because they've got a similar rule, at least for players that are based there, which is affecting Andrew Wiggins. We'll get to him later.
Right.
So it is a basketball question, which means it's legitimate for us to ask about. It's legitimate for fans to wonder about. It's legitimate for certain for the Nets to be concerned about. You're one of their three most important players. You're making a boatload to play for this team. You have a responsibility to that franchise, to the NBA, to your teammates. This isn't... no one's asking you to do something crazy. Like, if everybody wants to come back to anything that we're saying with, yes, but respect, you've got a personal decision. Folks, this is not some great personal decision. No one is asking you to chop your arm off, to undergo voluntary surgery or some special procedure or something. It's just a vaccine of which we have all had a gazillion collectively in our lifetimes for measles and mumps and polio and all kinds of other stuff. Flu vaccine. There's nothing crazy about this vaccine. There's nothing unusual about this vaccine. There's nothing particularly risky about this vaccine. But we do know that it drastically, drastically reduces the risk and the spread of COVID, which is the whole freaking point. And Kyrie Irving, let's put the basketball aside because ultimately the basketball is trivial. It's important for our purposes of our discussion. This is a basketball podcast, but really he's putting other people at risk because even if you're vaccinated, yes, there are sometimes breakthrough cases. And even if your teammates or the assistant coaches or the training staff or anybody else working in the building, even if they are vaccinated and they just get a mild version, you can still spread it elsewhere. You could still pass it along to somebody who's more vulnerable or who is unvaccinated because they couldn't get it or whatever. This isn't just about you, Kyrie Irving, or Andrew Wiggins, or Bradley Beal, or anybody else who's still a holdout in this league. It's about everybody else in your surroundings, your teammates, team staff, everybody, which is what this whole vaccine and pandemic discussion has been about for society at large. Of course, the NBA is not unusual in this, and we should note, as CJ McCollum, the union's president, noted on Twitter 90% of players are vaccinated. So that's higher than the average across the country by far. So that's great. But the holdouts are going to drive me crazy. And last thing, it's probably not the last thing, but I should throw this back to you. This isn't about privacy. We're not asking about your religious beliefs. No one's asking about your views on abortion, who you voted for, your sex life. Like, this is not a privacy issue. This is a deadly virus that has killed 688,000 Americans and counting, and that's still killing 2,000 people a day on average across this country. It's not a privacy issue. This is a public health issue, and in this case, it is also a Kyrie Irving, you have a commitment to the people that you are on a team with issue. Forget the 43 home games, Chris. How about this scenario to bring it back to the basketball? The Nets will probably have the best record in the East. Great. At some point, there may be a Game 7 at Barclays Center. Maybe for the conference championship. Maybe for the NBA championship. And Kyrie Irving is going to voluntarily opt out because he refuses to take a perfectly safe vaccine that has been shown to reduce the spread and deadliness of this virus. You're just going to sit out Game 7. You're going to sit out every home playoff game. Maybe he gets it between now and then. Maybe he gets the vaccine between now and then. But if this is the line he's going to hold, I don't know what you're even doing.
So I've talked to a few people within the league and within the Nets, and the sense, well, there's some optimism, I would say, that Kyrie is going to get the vaccine. And the Nets have a little bit of a runway here to get him set up because they're in San Diego right now for the start of their training camp. There is no vaccine mandate in California. They play their first exhibition game in Los Angeles on October 3rd. Kyrie can play in that game. They don't play back at the Barclays Center until October 8th. So they've got a little bit of wiggle room here. And from what I gather, there's some hope that all the things you talked about, you know, the inability to play in the home games, the potential inability to play in a key playoff game will resonate with Kyrie Irving. There's also some hope amongst people I've talked to that Kevin Durant could get through to Kyrie Irving and say, look, I understand your beliefs. You don't want to do this, but it's a big year here, right? I mean, this is a championship season. Can you just put it aside and do what I've done, what James Harden has done, what most of our team has done? So there's some optimism there. Now, what you said is accurate. Nobody really knows what a guy like Kyrie Irving is going to do. We're talking about a man who has vigorously defended the flat earth theory, who has believed in JFK conspiracy theories, who once said in a podcast that the CIA killed Bob Marley, or the CIA was trying to kill Bob Marley. He is deep in the weeds of conspiracy theories. And if he is as dug in on his belief that the vaccine is bad, I don't know what he's going to do. But I do know that the Nets don't have many great options if he digs in his heels. This is unprecedented territory. You know, if Kyrie says, look, I'm not getting the vaccine, I'll play in road games, what do the Nets do here? Like, I don't think they can suspend him. Like, there is no vaccine mandate in the NBA. They can certainly not pay him, which would help their bottom line, I'm sure, a little bit. But how is that a tenable situation with Kyrie not playing in home games, popping up on the road, and in between his teammates having to answer questions day after day about, what about Kyrie? Have you talked to him about the vaccine? You think it's going to happen? Like, this would be a daily thing in Brooklyn. And guys like Harden and Durant and even some of the others, like Aldridge and Griffin, they're used to playing through distraction. They can insulate themselves a little bit, but this is a lot. That would be a lot to ask. So the Nets are kind of painted into a corner. They can't really trade him. Like, I was asking around for a couple of teams, just for their opinion on the trade value of Kyrie Irving. It's virtually zero. I mean, he makes $35 million this year, and he's as unpredictable as you get. So why would you give up anything of value to get him back in return? The Nets have just got to be crossing their fingers right now and hoping Durant and whoever else has influence over Kyrie in that organization gets through to him before October 8th.
Well, this adds, you know, and I'm glad you brought this up. It's another layer of this, right? You have the, you know, is he available layer of this. You have the sheer public health layer of this and responsibility layer, everything else. But then you also have it, not just the distraction factor, but chemistry. That's terrible for chemistry. You walk into a locker room where you're one of the best players on the team, and given the injury history of Kevin Durant, he only played half the – people keep forgetting this. Kevin Durant only played half the season last year, folks. Yep. Half the season, and there's no guarantee he's getting through a full season at this stage of his career post-Achilles injury. They will need Kyrie Irving at some point, potentially a lot. Just because you have Harden and Durant doesn't mean you're set, even though that is a huge head start on most of the league. You need Kyrie Irving, and he's an incredible talent. But if you walk in that locker room every day as the guy who is not available for half the games, that's a chemistry issue too. That will breed resentment. There's a fine line of how much players are going to respect each other's quote-unquote privacy or decisions on this. And at some point, probably potentially already, depending on the teammate, that's a chemistry issue too. That will breed resentment. In terms of trade value, look, somebody would probably roll the dice on him if they were desperate enough to, because he is incredibly talented and because in most other markets, he can play the whole season. It wouldn't be the same concern. Also, in most of the markets, they're not trying to win a championship this season. So he'd be less of a risk for someone else. But yeah, it would still be really hard given the various things he has done and said over recent years and making himself kind of toxic for, I think, a lot of people in this league.
I mean, the only thing, Howard, that makes like a modicum of sense is like, do you talk to Philadelphia about Ben Simmons? Like, I mean, Kyrie wouldn't have to move, really. Like, the Sixers actually train in southern New Jersey down in Camden. You know,
J.J. Redick commuted between Philly and Brooklyn where he lived. So, you know.
Like, and, you know, in a weird way, it makes some sense. I don't know how Simmons and Harden kind of coexist, but Simmons would add a defensive layer to that team that they're lacking. It's pretty clear they don't need more offensive firepower. They've got plenty of it with that team. They almost beat the Bucks last year with Irving out and Harden banged up. If you're Philadelphia, if you believe that Kyrie wants to be there, Kyrie and Joel Embiid makes a lot of sense with that team. I mean, it's in a weird way, like, and this is sometimes what happens, right? Like last year, you had Washington and Houston do a deal with Westbrook and Wall because they had two distressed assets. Wall wanted out of D.C. He was banged up, made a lot of money. Westbrook didn't really work in Houston. They needed a separation. He made a lot of money. They just swapped distressed assets. Do you think there's any chance that these two potentially distressed assets could be flipped for each other?
If I'm Sean Marks, I would absolutely be thrilled to swap Kyrie Irving for Ben Simmons at this point.
If you're Daryl Morey, though, don't you have kind of Daryl likes to swing for the fences with stuff like this. I mean, he brought in Carmelo Anthony years ago. Like he's done kind of crazier things, you know, with his trades.
Oh, I don't know if he's done crazier things than acquire Kyrie to put next to
But Kyrie, there is no, in Philadelphia, there is, as of right now, in Philadelphia, there is no vaccine mandate like in New York. Now that could change, of course. Like, you know, cities, the more progressive cities go first, and sometimes there's a trickle down effect.
Could you imagine?
It could happen, but
could you imagine he gets traded to another city to avoid that, and then that city pass? I mean, if another city were going to, I would think that team would probably be checking it, you know, around City Hall and that first to say, hey, we're not doing that here, are we? Before we trade for this guy, but no, I mean, look, they cannot afford to screw up the Ben Simmons trade. And their future with Joel Embiid, their ability to win championships with him in his prime, it all depends on getting max value for Ben Simmons. And if the value you get is an incredibly unpredictable Kyrie Irving, who also has an injury history, I don't know. That feels very risky for Philly to me. Let me just make one other quick point. I mean, I know we're going to talk. We'll probably talk about some of the other anti-vaxxers in the NBA, but let me just point out two things real quick. Baxter Holmes had a story for ESPN that I think popped last night, which had a really several poignant quotes from mostly anonymous folks around the NBA. This is a head athletic trainer talking to Baxter Holmes saying, quote, Say you have a small child with asthma and you're doing everything you can, but you bring home to your family and children of a certain age aren't able to be vaccinated yet. You bring something home to your family, meaning the virus, to these children who aren't vaccinated yet. Quote, it's real. It's a real thing. Breakthrough infections are a real thing. These are other people, Chris, in the NBA who are required to be vaccinated. And it is a mandate for just about everybody else except the players. And why isn't it for the players? Well, because, of course, it has to be collectively bargained just as it was with the refs. But the refs signed off on it. The players did not. And it makes me question union leadership. 90% of the union, as the union president, CJ McCollum, says, 90% of them are vaccinated. That's great. That's great. I they should be praised for that. Again, it's higher than the national average for adults in this country. But that means you have 40 to 45 holdouts in your midst. You have them outvoted by, yeah. Oh, I don't know, 90% to 10%. Why is the NBA, why is the National Basketball Players Association, why is the NBPA protecting and bowing to its vocal minority of anti-vaxxers who don't want to follow science and who do not understand their responsibility to each other?
I agree with that, by the way. I had this conversation with somebody yesterday, and imagine if it was any other topic, if it was any other issue. Like, if 90% of the rank and file are for something, it would get done. It would be, you know, it would be pushed for. And I don't know if 90% are necessarily for a vaccine mandate, but I'm sure 75%
sure
probably are. There are some. I heard Marcus Smart yesterday being like, look, I didn't want to get the vaccine, but screw it. I got to, you know, I don't want to be a distraction for my team. I don't want to be this to be hanging over my head all season long. I bet there's a lot of players that have that type of attitude, but there's still many more that probably believe strongly in a vaccine mandate. I agree with you. I think they're kind of bowing to a very vocal minority and don't want to inflame tension between the rank and file and Kyrie Irving, the rank and file and Andrew Wiggins, the rank and file and Bradley Beal. I don't get it, but I think that's probably the case. Let me before we continue on the anti-vax, because this was topic number one at Media Day yesterday, especially amongst the players we know to be unvaccinated. Andrew Wiggins at the top of that list. Wiggins, as we noted earlier, in the same position as Kyrie Irving. San Francisco is about to have a law on its books that says unvaccinated people cannot be in enclosed places like the Chase Center. I believe that law goes into effect on October 13th before the start of the regular season. Here's Wiggins yesterday talking about his looming problem with being unvaccinated.
You know, against the wall, but I'm just going to keep fighting for what I believe, and whether it's one thing or another, get the vaccination or not get the vaccination, who knows? I'm just going to, you know, keep fighting for what I believe and what I believe is right. You know, what's right to one person isn't right to the other, you know, vice versa.
Andrew, you seem pretty convinced. What's the reason for not just explaining what you believe?
It's none of your business. That's what it comes down to. You know, I don't ask you guys about your beliefs. I don't ask you guys what you think is right or wrong. You know, we're different people. It can be like parenting. Like, you know, some people shed their beliefs onto their children. Some people let their children to grow up and believe what they want to believe. You know, who are you guys where I have to explain what I believe? Or, you know, what's right or what's wrong in my mind. We're two totally different people. You know, what you think is not what I think. What I think is not what you think.
All right, we'll get to that. Halfway across the country, you had Bradley Beal, who very publicly dealt with a case of COVID over the summer when he was knocked off the USA basketball team because he caught COVID-19. Beal was asked about his vaccination status and why he has declined to take the vaccine.
I have family. My mom and dad are vaccinated. My older brothers are vaccinated. My sister-in-law is vaccinated. I have people that are very close to me that are vaccinated, just as well as I have people that are close to me and related to me that are not. So it's a fine line. It's a personal choice between everybody. 100%. Like, I understand both sides of it. Like, I understand that there is a percentage of people who can get very sick. I didn't get sick. I didn't get sick at all. I lost my smell, but that was it for me. Everybody's going to react different. Everybody's going to take it differently. I mean, some people have bad reactions to the vaccine. Nobody likes to talk about that. And what happens if one of our players gets the vaccine and they can't play after that, or they have complications after that? Because there are cases like that, but I feel like we don't talk about those as heavily because they're so minute, maybe. But I mean, they are existent. So
Howard, you heard Wiggins, you heard Beal. We talked about Irving. What stands out to you about what we heard yesterday?
Andrew Wiggins saying my back is definitely against the wall, as if this is something to fight your way out of, as if this he's facing some sort of adversity, and I'm just going to keep fighting for what I believe. So then the obvious follow-up question was posed to him. So, okay, so what is it that you believe? Can you explain? Why not explain what it is you believe? This is about beliefs. And he says, none of your business. You know, I don't have to explain this to you guys. Well,
you know why, no, Howard? You know why he can't explain that? Because there is no explanation.
Of course there is.
Because if Wiggins or Beal, and you heard Beal kind of say some crazy things in that clip we played, but like, if they tried to offer up the explanations they're buying into, they'll look like fools. They will. They'll look like they're tinfoil hat-wearing internet researchers who are just buying into the darkest conspiracy theories on the web. And I don't think they want to do that. I think deep down they know they're kind of crazy, and they know that their arguments don't really stand up to scrutiny. So that to me is why these guys don't go deep on their explanations.
And this is what really kills me though, Chris. And this is where, like, listen, I have confidence that the league and the Players Association have done their best to educate players, or to educate the holdouts in particular, about the safety of the vaccine, the necessity of the vaccine, the benefits of the vaccine. I assume that they have made all these points. But I just cannot believe that Bradley Beal is sitting up there saying, look, I had it, and I didn't even get sick. I just lost my sense of smell. Like, well, that is getting sick. You lost your sense of smell. That's not normal, okay? It affected you, like, neurologically and physically. Like, and besides that,
Let me tell you this, Howard. I that happened to me, losing taste and smell. It was one of the more terrifying 3 days of my life, because I'd read all the reports about people not getting it back for weeks or months or however long. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, God, am I going to get this back? Or is this going to be long-term? Could it be permanent? I mean, it's the real deal.
Yeah, and besides that, it's not about whether you, Chris Mannix, were able to survive it, or whether you, Bradley Beal, are manly enough to have survived COVID. And so you think you don't need the vaccine because it wasn't really that bad. It's not about you. The whole point of the vaccine and this pandemic and the way we're handling it as a country and the way you're handling it as a league in this case is that it's not just about you. It's never just about you. It's about the fact that this is also incredibly contagious. There are breakthrough cases. You're trying to protect everyone, and especially the most vulnerable, and possibly the person that you're never going to meet, possibly the children of the team head trainer or somebody. Like, that's the point, Bradley Beal. It's not about whether or not you had a mild case and survived it. It's about who you can pass it on to in the meantime. Also, as a sheer basketball matter, if you get even remotely, like, even if you just test positive, even if you're asymptomatic entirely, now you have to quarantine. If you have to quarantine, you're not available for your team. So at a minimum, you should be concerned about the fact that if you got sick again, it's going to hurt your team. That is the most trivial part of this, but at a minimum, you should be keeping that in mind. So don't tell us about how you survived and it was fine and it was no big deal. It's never about just you. And, you know, Andrew Wiggins, I don't even know where to begin with him, because, like, the beliefs thing just kills me. This is not about beliefs. This is not religion. This is not politics. This is science. The thing works. The vaccine works. And it's important and it's necessary. And if you don't want to take it and you want to compromise your team, you know, I just don't even know how to reason with somebody like that.
Yeah, it was asked all across the league yesterday, and it'll be asked for days and weeks to come as some of these cities Maybe there are other cities that put in mandates. Wouldn't be surprised to see Los Angeles do it at some point. Some of the more progressive cities that are out there do these things. And you know, how teams and players respond is going to be really interesting to watch. All right, let's talk strictly basketball here for a second, Howard. Sixers Media Day. Doc Rivers, Daryl Morey sat down first and strapped on their helmets and got ready for the verbal barrage when it comes to questions about Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, of course, not there. No indications that Simmons is going to be in Philadelphia anytime soon. I want to play one cut from Doc Rivers when a reporter in Philadelphia asked Doc point blank if he knew why Ben Simmons didn't want to be there.
That's a good question. You know, it's a tough answer because it wasn't as clear as we probably would want it. You know, wanting to change places to you know, for whatever reason. So, you know, it's tough to play here, you know. But Ben didn't say that. But, you know, you got to assume that's probably part of it. And I can't say he said that. That's just an assumption. So, you know.
You know, I love that question, Howard, because it didn't have a big buildup. It was short. It was to the point. And I don't think Doc Rivers had a great answer for it. I think deep down, Doc probably knows exactly why Ben Simmons doesn't want to be there. He sat with him, you know, out in Los Angeles for a long meeting. They have had constant dialogue with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports about Ben Simmons. He knows why Ben Simmons doesn't want to be there, but he didn't want to answer it in that moment. What was your takeaway from the Sixers press conference?
Boy, did they look uncomfortable. Doc and Daryl looked incredibly uncomfortable, tense, defensive as hell. Doc in particular, because of course he had to once again try to spin his quotes from after game seven, which I'm sorry, like, we've all seen the video. It's on YouTube. It's still there. I replayed it again last night. Like
yeah, he didn't answer it the way he's trying to say he answered it one way. It sure didn't sound to me like he was answering it that way. He was basically saying, I don't know if Ben Simmons can be a point guard, a championship team. He wasn't saying, I don't know, I don't want to answer that right now. I mean, that's what he's trying to get everyone to believe he was saying. But I think he was really frustrated in that moment, as everybody was in Philadelphia, with not just the performance by Ben Simmons in Game 7, but throughout the course of that series, where he was just incredibly reluctant to shoot it, especially in the fourth quarter.
I've always liked Doc Rivers. Doc is great with the media.
Great.
His candor, his willingness to talk about issues on and off the court, to address things in a candid way, maybe not always entirely truthful, but no coach is entirely truthful with us. It's fine. I appreciate his candor, and I even appreciate that at times he's going to have to kind of you know, massage things a little bit in a way that we might sit there and go, hey, he's doing that coach thing where you're trying to placate your players or protect them. That's fine. But this is a case where he's outright gaslighting us or attempting to. Like, the quote was, the question was after game seven, can Ben Simmons be the point guard of a championship team? And Doc says, quote, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that. He's saying now it was a general, I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what to tell you guys. I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to say about anything. We just lost a game seven. I'm still processing. Like, okay, that, yes, potentially, plausibly, you could have been meaning that in a more general sense, but it was a very, very specific question, very specifically about Ben Simmons and about whether he could be a point guard of a championship team. And you said, I don't know, multiple times. And you could have said, yeah, he can be, but he's not right now. Or, yeah, he can be the point guard of a championship team, but we need him to do X, Y, Z, or he's got to work on this. He didn't say no, he can't be, but he didn't say yes either. So this continued, you know, belated spin campaign months later, we all know what we heard at the time. It just doesn't make any sense for him to go to these lengths now. Just, like, you know, say, at a minimum, say, you know what, guys? I could see why people took it that way, but it wasn't what I meant. Instead of being all angry and defensive and blaming the media and blaming everybody, like, the rest of the world believed, heard it one way. Anyway, it's a little strange. Whether that's why Ben Simmons wants out, or whether that's one piece of it, and what Joel Embiid said, how Philly fans have reacted, the fact that maybe he'd just be better off on a team built around him instead of built around Joel Embiid. Any and all of these things possible. Bottom line is they are in a now untenable situation. They certainly hinted at the likelihood of fining Ben Simmons every day for not showing up, which they can and should do. But this is messy.
It's messy, and I get the sense that Daryl Morey is not going to just dump Ben Simmons at the first chance he gets. I got the sense, just watching that presser, listening to Daryl Morey, that he's going to dig in here for a bit, because not only does he not want to just flip Ben Simmons for 25 cents on the dollar, that doesn't make any sense, but there's a precedent that could be set here. If Ben Simmons, with 4 years left on his contract, can force his way off a team, what's going to stop other players from doing that, you know, in the foreseeable future, from signing a contract to get the max level money 1 year, and the next year being like, I don't want to be here anymore. Find me a deal that makes sense to me, and I'll go there. So I got the sense that this is going to get ugly between the Sixers and Ben Simmons over the next couple of weeks. I mean, Daryl said we expect him to show up at some point. He believes that these types of things can be resolved. I'm not so sure, but that's what he said publicly. And he did mention that it's pretty well spelled out in league rules and in player contracts just what the fines look like. So I would expect Ben Simmons, sooner rather than later, to start incurring fines from Philadelphia. And frankly, he should. He should. I understand the situation kind of sucks right now. Bad finish to last season. We signed the deal. Yeah. We signed a contract to be there for 5 years. And yes, there's an argument to be made, and Draymond Green has made it in the past, that you know teams can do whatever they want. You know, they can just trade you whenever they want, right? But they can't not pay you. So if you show up, they've got to pay you your salary. Ben Simmons needs to show up. And if he doesn't, I just don't know how I don't see Philadelphia just cutting bait. I don't see them caving, at least not anytime soon.
I've seen some people try to rationalize this or defend Ben Simmons with the, well, the Sixers are at fault because of what Doc said or what Joel Embiid said or what. I'm sorry, folks. Like, being hypersensitive to criticism is not a good reason to hold out and not fulfill your contract. If you want to be traded, you have the right to make the trade demand. That's fine. You have a right to be mad. You have a right to be uncomfortable. You have a right to even make the team uncomfortable, I guess, to an extent. You do not have the right to not fulfill your contract unless you want to lose the money attached to that contract. I don't care what was said about you or how mean somebody was or how insensitive they were or how critical they were. I'm sorry. Other superstars in this league have dealt with far worse for decades before you. I don't understand why Ben Simmons is somehow supposed to be immune or protected from all criticism of his game, whether it's by fans or media or his own organization.
What did you think of what Embiid said? I mean, I thought Embiid, who is never brief with his remarks, had he tried to publicly fix the situation a little bit. I thought he had an interesting answer to our friend Tim Bontemps' question about what would you say to Ben Simmons if you got in a room with him, where he basically said, I'm disappointed, because while it's been rough the last few months and we haven't won anything in the playoffs, we are a team trending in the right direction. We are a team with the potential to make some noise in the playoffs. Remember, this was the number one seed in the Eastern Conference last year. Embiid, if not for injury issues, probably would have been the MVP. Ben Simmons, for all his flaws, was an all-star. And, you know, as much as Doc might have flubbed the first question on Simmons, a little bit later on, he had a good answer to a question about Simmons, where he talked about a guy with his kind of strengths that don't come around very often. Like, he's the real deal in multiple different areas. What did you think of Embiid's kind of take on all this?
I mean, look, I appreciate the fact that he's trying to kind of patch it up and wants Ben Simmons back. You could read that two ways. You could take it at face value and figure, you know what, these guys have had a great deal of success together. You know, it's not championship or nothing to as a definition of success. They've won a ton of games. They've had some nice playoff runs. They've not done as much as everybody there would hope, of course. But, you know, I'm sure on some level Embiid appreciates the success that they have had and he understands the value of him. And then you want to look at it cynically, like, yeah, the sooner Simmons comes back and plays, the better chance they have of trading him for something valuable. And maybe Embiid gets a better fitting co-star with him. So you could read it either way. But I think it was the right thing for Joel Embiid to say. It was the right way to approach it. It was constructive. It was positive. So, yeah, I mean, no more, no less than that.
I think if you're Ben Simmons, like, and you're watching this, like, I'm sure you appreciate your teammates trying to go out of their way to say that they want you back. But deep down, if you're Simmons, don't you kind of know that you don't really want me back? You want me back so I play well, improve my trade value, so you can trade me for Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum, whoever else is available in the next couple of months. You don't want to play with me for the next 4 years. You want to trade me. Which, again, doesn't excuse Ben Simmons' absence. You sign a contract. You're making $147 million over the next 4 years. You play. Simple as that. You show up and you do your job. But I can see Ben Simmons viewing all this with a healthy dose of skepticism, Howard, that maybe this team doesn't really want him.
Which is fine, but it's also irrelevant. You should be
it
there
is
because
irrelevant. I agree.
You should be there because your contract says you should be there. And you get paid all this money to be there and to play the best of your ability. No, you don't need a formal invitation. You don't need a box of candy from your teammates. You don't need anything. You just need the contract. Just go fulfill your contract until they have a chance to trade you for the right deal.
I agree. I don't think that right deal, though, is coming along anytime soon. Unless you call Sean Marks and send a car service for Ben Simmons to bring him to Brooklyn, send a car service for Kyrie Irving to bring him to Philadelphia, and maybe that works for everybody.
Send the Acela. They just send an empty Acela each way to pick
Perfect.
Up the other guy.
Sold. Ben Simmons gets off, Kyrie Irving gets on, everybody's problems are temporarily solved. Let me ask you about what we saw in Portland yesterday, Howard. Damian Lillard spoke to the media for the first time in the last couple of months. Lillard, of course, a lot of drama after last season. Seemed like he wanted out of Portland. Portland made some moves in the offseason, but nothing really substantial. I heard Neil Olshey, the GM, get up there and say, like, this is the deepest team we've had since he's been in Portland. I don't know what we're looking at there. Like, I don't know what that's all about. Here's what Lillard had to say about the state of the Portland Trailblazers.
I mean, I think it's anytime you come into a off season and you want to make changes bad, it's one thing to go out looking for it and to try to make it happen. Obviously, you need a partner. You know, it takes two. But you also don't want to go out there and just do anything. You know, when we've established so much as a team and as an organization, you don't want to just go do something just to say, I made a change. You want it to be in line, you know, with something that could actually make us better and something that could send us to the level that we're trying to get to. So like I said, we've done some things that that I like. You know, I didn't expect us to go out there and get Kevin Durant all of a sudden. But you know, I think the conversations that we've had, you know, what we've sat down and talked about, I feel like it's genuine that we're trying to move in the right direction and give our team a chance to actually go get it done. So that's what I feel. I have faith in the fact that, you know, we've had real conversations and that's what everybody's intentions are. So
it seems like for the moment, Damian Lillard and the Blazers are on the same page. But I'm not really buying that this is an improved Blazers team. We've talked about this in the past. I'm not really buying that just the addition of Chauncey Billups and some new defensive principles are going to suddenly take this team from a bottom of the NBA defensive team to an upper half. I still see many of the same problems in Portland that I saw last year. And while Lillard seems okay with it right now, I feel the same way I did a couple of weeks ago, Howard. Give me a few weeks into the season to see what this team looks like before I believe Damian Lillard will stay for the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've done a lot of ranting already on this podcast, and we've had a lot of cynicism and skepticism. I want to believe Dame Lillard. I do believe Dame Lillard. I think those were his honest, earnest thoughts about the Blazers. He said a lot of positive things. Now, do I think they dramatically improved the roster? No. And he didn't try to make that case either, really.
He didn't.
Yeah, I mean, he says he believes in who they have. He actually even, you know, threw in that big caveat about, like, look, I didn't think we were going to go out and get Kevin Durant. I didn't expect that was going to happen. But I think he appreciates they made some attempts to replenish and to bolster themselves a little bit. Larry Nance Jr. certainly will help bring a little bit more of a defensive tenacity there. Maybe all they need is some good health, too. I mean, I don't really buy that, Chris. I don't buy that this is a team that can make a run or multiple runs for the finals with the personnel they have now, unless there's some crazy breakout by somebody. Maybe Anthony Simons finally becomes the star that they thought he was going to be. One of the other young guys. But I like the fact that Lillard showed up on day one and basically said, we could contrast this with Ben Simmons, who he's always tied to. But he showed up and said, look, I'm here. I want to win here. I'm not moving off that. I've always been about trying to win it all in Portland, and I'm still about that. Now, could a 10-game losing streak in November change that? Sure. Is the whole league, especially Philadelphia, waiting for that to happen? Yes. Is Lillard himself bracing for that? I mean, no. Like the guy's got supreme belief in himself and his ability to lead this team somewhere meaningful. And they have had a lot of bad injuries over the last few years. If they can keep Nurkic healthy through a full season and McCollum healthy through a full season, you know, maybe they've got a shot to do something. I don't know. I just don't know what
that something is. Like, what is that something?
I know. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, are you good enough at your best? Whatever the Blazers' absolute hypothetical best is it enough to knock off a Lakers team at full strength or a Nuggets team when they have Jamal Murray or a Clippers team when they have Kawhi Leonard? Are you better than the Jazz? Like, no. I mean, that's the thing. Are you better than the Suns, the team that we're always going to keep leaving out of these conversations?
I can answer those questions. No. All of them are hard. I mean, like, there are some things to watch with Portland. Like, how does the Lillard, McCollum, Norm Powell trio work? Can they all play together?
A full season of it, yeah.
That's like three guys, 6'4 and under, and Powell's about 6'3. Like, can they coexist defensively? I mean, that's what we talked about. They're supposed to be a better defensive team. Robert Covington, is he going to be the defensive player we kind of hoped he, or the Blazers hoped he was going to be when they acquired him? Yusuf Nurkic, is he more consistent? That's been a big problem for him over the course of his career. All these guys that Neil O'Shea says makes the team deeper, are they effective? I'm not sure who he's talking about, really. Like Cody Zeller? Like what are we doing here? Like this?
Yeah, I'm still skeptical about the overall roster and ability to break through. But look, none of us really believe in the Russell Westbrook addition to the Lakers. Like, we all think that that's a awkward fit at best and may not work. And LeBron is, you know, going into year 19. I mean, so the Lakers are potent, but they're not guaranteed. Their roster is entirely turned over from the championship year. There's nothing guaranteed about the Lakers. There's nothing guaranteed about the Suns repeating as West champs. We all have doubts about the Jazz. We certainly have doubts about the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard and the Nuggets without Jamal Murray. We don't know if Dallas has enough around Doncic. I mean, there's enough caveats, Chris, around all these teams that if everything broke right for the Blazers, is it that crazy that they could come out of the West? I mean,
it's that crazy. It's that crazy.
I'm not sure. I'm not so sure it is.
Yes, it is.
Like, the Warriors have caveats with Klay Thompson and certainly with Andrew Wiggins. I mean, none of the teams that we could point to in the West are a sheer lock or that overpowering. There was an interesting passage here in the story by Jason Quick at The Athletic off of the press conference yesterday with Lillard, where he says, He says, what gives him hope, what gives Lillard hope, is something that Draymond Green mentioned about the Warriors' first title in 2015, and it was similar to what Chauncey Billups, of course the Blazers' new coach, brought up Monday about last season's Phoenix Suns. Nobody expected the Warriors back in 2015 or the Warriors this past, or the Suns this past season to do it. And Lillard says, quote, I was sitting there and I was like, it can really be done. That's how I feel. It can be done. And it says, after he watched the Bucks win the title, he says, quote, I was even more convinced. Sometimes it happens when it was least expected. You just never know. Like, that's the right attitude for him. You and I don't have to believe it or buy it, but that is the right attitude for him, is to say, sometimes everything breaks your way and the chemistry is right and there's some good fortune involved. The Blazers aren't terrible. They were in the conference finals a couple of years ago. And granted, things broke their way then too.
Crutch, though. Like, that's like, okay.
I'm not trying to make the case for him to stay.
I'm not making a case.
I'm glad he doesn't want to leave.
I'm glad he doesn't want to leave either. I think Lillard, Bradley Beal staying where they are is great for the NBA. You don't want stars just defecting for bigger markets or greener pastures whenever they have the opportunity. I just don't see the path here. I mean, you talk about the Warriors. Draymond Green, back in 2015, was arguably the NBA's best defensive player. Klay Thompson was one of the best defensive players at his position. Very good defensive player. Where are the defensive stoppers in Portland? This is the 29th in the league in defensive efficiency last year. Is Larry Nance going to make that big a difference? Is Cody Zeller going to make that big a difference? The roster's largely the same. And if you can't defend at a level better than that, and said it a million times, maybe Terry Stotts wasn't a great defensive coach, but you cannot just conjure up a great defensive team when you don't have the horses to do it. And Lillard, McCollum, Powell, not great defensive players. Nurkic, okay at best. I don't see it, Howard. I mean, the Warriors could get stops. As great as they were offensively, and they were dynamic, they could get stops. They had two guys at least on the floor at all times. Harrison Barnes could get stops too. They could defend. This team doesn't defend. And if you don't defend, you are no better than like the sixth seed in your conference, and you're probably getting bounced in the first round.
I would not be placing money. I'm not a gambler anyway. I would not be placing money in the Blazers winning the West or going to the finals anytime in the next couple of years.
I'm writing this in the show notes. Beck picks Blazers to win West. This is going in the show notes.
His line of thinking is the way you have to look at it. It is, you know, unless you want to just, you know, despair and issue the trade demand, which he clearly does not want to do. He may yet get there. It may change. But for now, you saw what the Blazers were able to do, what they weren't able to do. You can be disappointed. You can pout about it. You can pull a Ben Simmons and just stay home. Or you can walk in on day one on media day and say, listen, stranger things or other things we haven't expected in this league have happened. Sometimes things break your way and you can have that breakthrough season. It's the right attitude for him, even if maybe it's not entirely realistic considering the competition in the West.
There's a lot of competition in the West. And you're right, some of the bottom tier teams do have some questions. But, you know, do I have questions about Russell Westbrook? Yes. I still buy into LeBron and Anthony Davis, though, that's for sure. The Suns, I think, are going to be better. The Jazz, I think, are going to be better. Clippers will take a step back, but the Nuggets will take a step forward once Jamal Murray gets back and healthy once again. So that's at least four teams, Howard, that I think are clearly better than Portland. They're going to play one of them in the first round. I don't know how they win a series like that. But the first few weeks will be telling. You know, we'll see if chemistry changes, if some of these minor additions really help, if Chauncey really is a godsend as a head coach. That's going to be one of the bigger stories in the league watching. Two things real quick. Zion Williamson had a broken foot in the offseason. I mean, can we talk about that for a second? Like how that kind of slid under the radar. The Pelicans didn't reveal that. He's supposed to get to be ready for the start of the season. But this is a pretty friggin' big year in New Orleans because they're already panicking down there about Zion wanting out and wanting to go to a bigger market like New York or somewhere else. New coach in Willie Green, not a great start to the proverbial training camp for the Pelicans.
Not at all. And look, we could talk about how important this season is and how important it is for the franchise to show progress to assure Zion he wants that he should stay there long term. But how about just the fact that a guy at his size and with his explosiveness and athleticism and all of the pressure and strain that he puts on his joints, that he's had off-season foot surgery after the other injuries that he came into the league with, the knee and, you know, he, like, this is, remember when he arrived in the league, as much as he was the absolute positive, no questions asked number one pick, there were concerns about his health because he had already had some issues coming in. And this is, he's entering year three, and this is a, this is another serious-ish injury. So, yeah, we could talk about the long term and whether the Pelicans are doing enough to assure him that this is the place to spend his career, and will, whether he'll be the first guy ever to just to sign the qualifying offer off of his rookie deal and walk away, or demand a trade in year three or four or something crazy. Like, we could talk about all those things, but how about just the fact that this is the guy that you're trying to build your entire franchise around, and he can't stay healthy, and foot injuries for big men, even though he's not, like, he's not a 7-footer, obviously.
Well, but he's putting a lot of pressure on that foot, that's for sure.
I'm at least as concerned about the health issues long term with him as I am about his happiness with the franchise.
I mean, look, there's also the, you know, does Zion and Brandon Ingram work together? I mean, I've talked to a couple of coaches in kind of building out our preview issue next month who don't believe that to be the case, that they're kind of an oil and water type of mix and aren't great together long term. And if Zion is limited early on and can't develop that, try to develop that chemistry with Ingram early on, you know, another season missing the playoffs would not be good for the Pelicans franchise, one that has not had a lot of stability, especially in the coaching box and other areas over the last couple of years. One last thing, Kristaps Porzingis is going to be a power forward in Dallas. That, according to Jason Kidd. I don't think Porzingis' best position, Howard, is power forward. I know we're in the positionless basketball era where guys play threes, sometimes four slots, but Porzingis, to me, he's a center right now. He's not Anthony Davis out there defensively. He's not sliding his feet and moving with smaller power forwards. I think he's got to be a center. And to hear Jason Kidd talk about Porzingis playing more of the four, I don't know if that's a recipe for success in Dallas.
No, I don't think so either. But, you know, this has been the thing with Porzingis since he's been in Dallas, period. I think probably when he was in New York, too. Like, this is how he sees himself. Like, it's, you know, Anthony Davis, obviously a very different and more talented player, especially defensively. But Anthony Davis has been reticent to ever call himself a center or commit full time to center, even though that has been some of the best lineups the Lakers have had. And, you know, should Porzingis be playing more center than power forward? Sure. Can they get away with it depending on who's playing next to him in the course of a game, so that they're switching matchups and everything? Like, yeah, but the more you put him in positions where he has to, you know, come away from the basket, especially defensively, you're compromising things. But if Porzingis is going to still insist on the idea that I'm only playing power forward, I'm not a center, and you're Jason Kidd coming in on day one, you're doing what a lot of coaches are doing these days, which is placating your stars, or in Porzingis' case, a would-be star, former star who's trying to get it back. I mean, and that, to me, Chris, that's the bigger issue for them, is just, okay, it's possible and reasonable to say that Porzingis' struggles last year had a lot to do with having an offseason that was marred by knee surgery, recovering from the meniscus. He presumably had a full offseason this time. Not full, because we had a short offseason. But he had a full-ish offseason with no surgery and no injury. Could just train. Is he coming back to the Mavericks looking more like the player who became an all-star at a young age in New York? The guy that the Mavericks thought they were getting? Because if they get that guy or something approximating him, they have a chance. Because Luka's that special. Maybe they don't need Porzingis to absolutely be that number two star. Maybe there's another number two star, and Porzingis is your number three star at some point. Good luck getting that number two star. But he at least needs to be a lot closer to what they thought they were getting a few years back. And if he can do that, this team gets to a whole other level. Because, and let me just point it out as long as we're on this, as bad as he was at times last year, Porzingis, and as bad as he certainly was defensively, the guy still averaged 20 points, nearly 9 rebounds, and a block a game, and shot 37.6% from three. Like, not that many guys in the league put up those kinds of numbers. And you could say, numbers are sometimes misleading. Yeah, sometimes. And especially if you give up a ton defensively as a big, and they need him to be a shot blocker, which he was a really, you know, effective shot blocker his first few years, averaged 2.5 blocks a game as last year with the Knicks. But 20 points and 9 rebounds and a block a game and great 3-point shooting at that position is not something to sniff at. Like, if he can get his body in order and stay out there and play more effectively defensively, presumably with a healthy body, the Mavericks have a chance to do some damage. And I know some people around the league are pretty high on them.
No, I'm pretty high on them. I thought the Reggie Bullock signing was excellent. That's going to be a floor spacer for them and another perimeter defender that they can use. I worry about the rotation there up front because I don't know how you survive defensively. And this is a team that did take a step back last year defensively. They were in the bottom third of the league in defensive rating. I don't know how you are consistent enough defensively with Porzingis alongside, Willie Cauley-Stein or Dwight Powell or Boban. Like, it just...
Maxi Kleber. Yeah, if he's the center and Kleber's the four, or, you know, and again, maybe they're switching matches. But
maybe. I mean, if you want to call him a power forward and, you know, make Kleber the center, I guess you could do that. But I think he's a bigger threat offensively, clearly, as a five. If you can force centers to come out and guard you, beat them a little bit off the dribble, play pick and roll with them, like it unlocks a lot of different things. If you're a five, less so at the four. I'm big on Porzingis. I think his strengths far outnumber his weaknesses, and I do think he can be a number two guy on a high-level team. I just think positionally, you got to put him in the right spot. I just don't think power forward is the right spot. Howard, good to be back. Good to be back in training camp. I'm sure we'll have a lot more to discuss next week.
I'm going back to bed, Chris. I'll wake me up for the pod next week.
You're so soft.